Think we'll open in the usual way with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Bill, as you know, is here. Usually he comes in late, but it's necessary for him to get to another meeting. So without further ado, I'll give you our own Bill.
Hello, dear people. Because of my advancing age, it was suggested that I need not come tonight, the heavy duties of the General Service Conference being the reason. But I wouldn't miss this occasion for the world, even though I must shortchange you this time by getting off a little early. And the one sentence that always strikes me as I stand here at this annual rally is this: Al-Anon is the greatest thing that's happened since AA began. You know, the 12 steps are not only a way to sobriety, they are a way to life. And we drunks come into AA, and the aim is sobriety, because without it there is nothing. And we do the first step, and we do the last step, and we run madly and happily around in AA. And then we come home and we say, "Mama, you'd better get a load of this. You certainly need it." So the earlier idea among the brethren, the alcoholic brethren, of Ma's getting a load of this was that Mom come down to the meetings where she could warm her hands at the blazing flame of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she could make coffee. And she could have the house full of drunks who burned up the carpet, threw cigarettes on the floor, and stayed all night. And she could wait on stricken AAs. So that's how Ma got her load in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yet I must add that even from the earliest times, there was very naturally a deep kinship in experience and indeed in suffering between those who had been our partners. So in a way, there was a kind of an Al-Anon all along. There was this exchange of experience. There was this attempt to apply the 12 steps. There was an attempt to understand the erring boy, who indeed might still be erring even though sober. I think, though, there was a deep yearning to belong. And because of the rather exclusive nature of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't think you folks ever felt you quite belonged. Then about 1950 or 51, there was a getting together among you folks which copied the early attempts that Lois sponsored up in the Ole Club and at home where we had meetings of getting the wives together. The same kind of a thing that Ann Smith did out in Akron. The same thing that had sporadically sprung up here and there. But we began to get requests for listings in the AA directory for groups various names, but obviously the families and friends of AA who wished to get together and who were indeed getting together. Not so much to find out what ailed the alcoholic, that had already become very obvious, but to find out what ailed them and how the alcoholic way of life had deformed them and what they could do about these emotional dislocations and how, if the spouse was still drinking or had sobered and was even harder to live with than when drinking, how you could relate yourself to him in a way to promote practicing these principles in all our affairs. So really, it was but a bare 10 years ago when this huge vacuum in family relations commenced to be filled. And in a way, it's nobody's fault that it was the last to be filled. Because the close-in relations were the hardest, and the more distant were the easiest. It was easy enough for an active AA to be highly approved in the group and to feel perhaps a little overimportant about it. Happily, most AAs had learned to do something supremely well in business, no matter what the business was. So it wasn't too hard to get jobs and to relate yourself to the employer and bring home a paycheck. The average AA was applauded in the community for doing himself something which the God of grace of God had really done. So these more remote relations were the ones attended to first because they were the easier. And then there was the sort of widowhood which was imposed upon partners of drunks. The drunks knew that they had to work hard with other people. Sometimes this was carried to extremes. So Mom often felt that she was on shore, whereas AA was like a lot of a flock of ducks around on the other side of the island, which is quite wild. Now, in the good life, it's senseless to assess blame. I've had no intention of doing this. But these were the conditions that led up to the formation of what I have just declared to be the greatest thing that's happened since AA began. Moreover, you people had to take your woes without anesthetic. We drunks had the booze. So in came these inquiries to be listed in the AA directory. And by this time, the headquarters people knew that this was a sort of a touchy subject. And I remember that the 1951 or 52 AA conference was then in session. And among its proposals was one that we list these new family groups, as they were called mostly, in the directory. I think most of us in headquarters failed. And to our surprise, and not a little embarrassment, delegates rose on the floor and made impassioned speeches. No, never. They ain't going to get into this club. So the very obvious and happy solution, and the right solution, was that you form your own clubs and that you run them yourselves, and that drunks like me only be admitted by sufferance, written permits if necessary, in which you could thrash out your own troubles. Such is the backdrop against which this society took shape. And from a mere 75 groups then clamoring to register, you have now run into, how many? I always lose count. 1,500 groups. And now many of you sitting here have come from the far reaches and distant places, I dare say some overseas. And the growth of this thing, and the rapidity with which this void has been filled, has astounded and amazed us all. It is a growth faster than AA ever had in its pioneering period. So like AA, you people too have gone through the time of your childhood, Al-Anon wise, through the time of adolescence. So now today, together with AA, and only this day, this particular day, you people have crossed a great threshold into a new future. This morning, I was admitted without ticket to the first meeting of the General Service Conference of ALMA. After only 10 years of life as such, why, it took the drunks nearly 20 years to make up their minds to have a conference. Now this means that these dedicated folks here at headquarters, lowest standing for them, as in a way I've stood for AA, have carried on and have helped to unify Al-Anon, have helped to spread it. It has been a self-appointed task. But you too, like AA, have adopted a similar tradition. And one of these traditions says that the ultimate authority shall be God as ye shall speak in the group conscience. And as I went down this morning and I looked at that meeting, and they had them parceled out as headquarters people and a sprinkling of delegates and a number of observers, and I saw the beginning of a welding of a family of service which might further unify AA, which would not get its authority from you, Lois and me, but which would get its authority and guidance from you. Now, as small as this meeting was, and considering the trepidation which the headquarters people had on its approach, I've heard it came out very well and could have predicted that. And it's the augury of far greater things to come. Now then, some of us in AA have always kind of had a notion that this was kind of program would be good for everybody. Might have a world effect. And yet we AAs have known better than to even say this very loudly. And I don't know that you people say it loudly. But please take notice of the fact that this thing has progressed from the drunk to the family to the friends and now, praise God, to the children who God bent up these alleys. So that the blaze of the Spirit is greater than the blaze of AA. It is the blaze of all near and dear to them, and the world is taking increasing note. God forbid we think it our destiny to save the world, especially appointed by God. But I think this society affords a prime example who would come and see and feel. Of the kind of life that so many people would like to lead if they only knew about it. I've run out of my better adjectives, so I'm going to conclude this with no rhetorical flourish. I'm simply going to say, dear folks, ain't it pretty damn wonderful?
Principles in all our affairs. No, I think it is the experience of most of us alcoholics as we set out on the recovery highway and try to resume the process of growing up, that the easy relation for us first is the relation with the AA. This is the kindred sufferer. This is the one who understands. So that is a distinction for most of us. Then there are friends, our business acquaintances, and most of us can quite promptly renew our relation with them. And we enjoy being spoiled by them when they say, "Isn't it wonderful what you've done?" But the rub comes, and this is not for blame to anyone. The rub comes with the close-in relation. And this, plainly enough, is where the greatest distortion and scarring and damage has occurred. As you remember, I made the remark the other night at the opening dinner that sometimes I find the exercise of trying to put myself in Lois's place. I, the non-alcoholic, and she, the drunk. Well, it's a hard thing to do with much success, and about all that you can come up with is the reflection that the only worse thing than being an alcoholic is being the wife or husband of one. Because you people have to take the ghastly sideswipe of this malady without any anesthetic. So there, oddly enough, sadly enough, in this relation which each of us wishes to have of the best, here is the most difficult area of repair. I realize I'm not saying one word that is new to any of you. I'm merely proving that a few of us drunk have some idea of what you've gone through and what the problem is. Now then, the drunk's idea of repair is to rush home and say, "Look, Ma, what I got. It's a wonderful, got a load of this AA. You come down to the meeting and we'll let you sit in on the open meeting. You can make the coffee." Well, you can warm our hands at this wonderful spot. But, of course, you don't exactly belong in the club. We'll put you out on the outer fringes, you know, and you can run in and get warm temporarily, but you can't, you don't quite belong. So we seek to put you, at least some of you, consciously or unconsciously, in a state of greater isolation than before. And what wonder then that some of you say, "My God, he was lots better when he was drinking." Now then, since this is the closest and the most important relation, since this is the relation that bears upon the rest of the family and all these growing kids, this is where the grave repair effort needs to be focused. And it's marvelous that you people, more than we alcoholics, see what the problem is. You see very clearly that it isn't only the problem of the alcoholic and understanding him. It is understanding what life with an alcoholic has done to warp you. And I congratulate you on the breadth and depth of this understanding that has been so well achieved in so many thousands and thousands of families. You see, if you were as drunk and you were repeatedly stigmatized, disgraced, jailed, ruined, sick, although it takes years of counting, you can come up with the conclusion that there's a little something matter with you. But if you're on the receiving end of this thing, and you have done your damnedest best, it's pretty hard to imagine that anything happened to you. So, that you have penetrated this wall that has been erected first by one party and then by the other between you. And we've got some visibility going both ways. And we got some sally forth and ingoing entrances. This is a great thing. One of the greatest since AA began. I think, too, it is appropriate for me to bring from all AAs, whether they understand this great thing here or not, the congratulations of our whole society. I also would like to dwell a little bit upon the deep satisfaction that some of us have who have been engaged in world service. I suppose that half of my own AA life has been devoted to this overall functioning of AA. Just as now, you people are devoting yourself to the overall functioning of talent. I'm glad, too, that you have been able to benefit by a lot of grievous experiences that we had in forming these services, that you people aren't. Partly because I think you were more stable, but you have been willing to borrow the lessons of our experience. For example, it was a very difficult thing indeed to form the first General Service Conference in AA, of which you are the Al-Anon counselor. A number of us, together with friends, had formed the Board of Trustees, and we had got out literature, and we'd taken over public relations, and we had begun to do the same for overall service that you understand so well. Now, those of us who have become accustomed to this sort of authority had become guardians, privately we thought, rather indispensable guardians of AS. And the idea of bringing in a conference of drunks who hadn't yet proved they could even operate a clubhouse was something for great concern and abhorrence. Now, you folks never seriously went through that stage in or out of the headquarters. I noticed that the folks in headquarters and laws were so damn glad for you people to get here that they never talked about it. It's just great because you understand the need for the linkage, the need for the continuity. You can't rest the future on people now in existence who are going to move off the scene. Who are going to be those successors? What is the linkage they're going to have with your stock? You, in effect, in coming here to do what in considerable part is a grubby lot of work, are really underwriting a prodigious insurance policy on the future of your society. I'm so glad you're here. Lois is so glad you're here. And I hope that there will be increasing numbers in your society and in our fellowship who will be equally glad. So again, on behalf of us drunks, I wish you Godspeed. And may God keep you and Alan on forever.
Tonight is our wonderful, beloved Bill. And he tells me I've thrown him all off stride. How can he ever talk now? But I never saw the time when he didn't have a powerful message for all of us. And now I would love to present Bill.
Things adjusted. Where shall I begin? Well, I could begin, as I always do, by saying, with increasing certainty each year, that the advent of the Al-Anon Society is the biggest thing that's happened since AA began. And were I to continue my old familiar talk, I would dwell on the suffering that our alcoholism has inflicted on you dear people, and remind you that for each of us who groans with the sufferings of alcoholism, even since he dried up, that for every one of us, and there are 5 or 10 of you. Nor need I dwell on the character of the sufferings and the deformities that we have inflicted upon you. It would be presumptuous for me to do this because you know better than we drunks do. So I thought we'd try for a change of stance or pace tonight and try to think together about the significance of world service to AA and, of course, to you. Today and for tomorrow. I'm most happily aware that a great many of the acute and fearsome problems that we encountered as a fledgling society have not been yours, because with great skill you have adapted our experience as expressed in the steps and the traditions and more lately the concepts for world service. There has been a perfectly marvelous and compared with us a very rapid adaptation. Actually, I think that AA has reached the end of an epoch, and you are nearing this end. The time when, let us say, that we are satisfied that the basics of the 12 steps will be practiced into the indefinite future, and that the traditions bearing so much upon our unity and upon our action, these things are clear. Only last year, a last structural refinement was placed in our society, the assumption of full responsibility by the AAs on the Board of Trustees. So therefore, we might conclude that from here on, everything is just going to be ducky. Well, I don't think so. We are living in a world of untold peril. We are in a world where man is set against man, group against group, nation against nation, as never before in history, and with instruments of destruction that defy the imagination. It is a very dangerous world, and in our happiness, and in our newfound unity, and in our peaceful pursuit of the general welfare, it is easy for us to forget this. But is it not true that as we look out upon the world, its divisions are no different in kind than those which shattered us first as alcoholics and then as families, to the point of virtual extinction. This was our A-bomb, which did not quite go off. So then, let us remember that these forces are not only around us. They are still in us. They are late. AA and Al-Anon represent, in a very real sense, as do the great religions of the world, an aspiration on the part of mankind to make constructive use of his instincts, whether they be for sex, for possession, for prestige. These instincts were God-given if they are constructively used and our program tries to channel instincts gone mad and rampant into the channels of growth in the likeness and image of the Father of Lights who presides over us all. This, as we know, is a halting pass, punctuated by adversities, and we face, have faced, and will always face the crucial question, are these adversities obviously permitted by the Creator? Are these adversities going to be converted into destruction, or into a propellant toward greater things? We are driven into AA by sheer, stark, and utter calamity. And then we come to a point where we say, but how wonderful this is. I don't like all these damn principles exactly, but they look right to me. So maybe I will conform, not because I wholly wish to, but because they seem good and right. And now and then we reach a plateau where, for the moment, we stand on the mountaintop, and there we conform because this is what we deeply and really want. And then the old forces take over, and we slide back down away and get back to the ought to, and then we come back to the terrible imperative, the must, because if we fail on the lower rung, then it is death or madness by alcoholism, an end into which we take into a living death those about us. Now then, the tradition of AA, and when I say AA, I mean Al-Anon too throughout this talk, is not a catalog of the virtues of our two societies. In thoughtless moments, we are apt to forget that all these things are in the nature of gifts. We forget with us AAs, the common welfare comes first. We say, in Al-Anon and AA, we have democracy in the purest town meeting style. In AA, we have no membership rules, whilst other societies forge rules, inflict punishments for their infractions. Forgetting, of course, that the demon Barleycorn is at the elbow always, awaiting to inflict the ultimate punishment for nonconformity. And yes, we go on and we say, well, of course, we do so well in AA and Al-Anon with our specialty that we really have time for these efforts in the world around us. Besides, we're about the best thing that's come along, and we don't want to be troubled with the complications of endorsements and alliances and all of this sort of thing. And then we say, well, of course, this is a very spiritual outfit, this Al-Anon, this AA. And of course, we have observed that even religious institutions possessing great amounts of real estate are likely to be somewhat contaminated. So we aren't going to have any real estate. And we're going to have the least possible property, a la St. Francis of Assisi. So we go along in this fashion to catalog our virtues. These, dear friends, are not our virtues. They are the gifts that have come out of the awful imperative of adversity. They are a code, really, of accepted do's and don'ts, the failure of which can lead to disunity, and from there, it is but a step to the brink of disaster. So in AA and in Al-Anon, we have all these gifts. In some respects, we are a unique island, a sort of a paradise in a sense, really. Something we scarcely deserve. We know not really why we have it, what was in God's mind. But here it is. Now then, so much for today. We can say that the edifice of the Spirit in its main outlines is complete. That it is like unto a cathedral on the great floor of which we stand, sure. And the side walls are there. And we think that they may not fail us because they are buttressed by the tradition. And now the spire is clearly to be seen in the form of service. At its apex, world service. A beacon which beckons all those who suffer alcoholism, and in Al-Anon, its malign consequence. Well, this is an unbelievable, unparalleled state of affairs. Set in its surroundings immense potential destruction. Now then, I am not pointing to that destruction as though it ought to be the occasion of our fear, but clearly enough, it should be the occasion for our prudence and our vigilance. Not so much the fear of these powers going astray in the world around us, as fears that the germs of these things are still in us and can rend our society. Now, one of the great unifying forces in AA in addition to 12 steps and the spirit of the 12 steps as manifested in the tradition. One of the greatest forces for growth and unity in our experience in AA and in more latter years in the experience of Al-Anon has been the world's service idea. Right at this juncture, people may inquire, but why don't our societies have some sort of government? Is there nobody in authority who can issue commands? Is there no one who can inflict even mild penalties? Is there no one who has the authority to collect money? No. We who are the trusted servants of the conscience of our two societies are not endowed with any of those attributes, not because we are so superior to the people around us, because we have Barleycorn who says, you are going to reasonably conform or I will kill you. And then we have the love of God and of man which draws us on. Ah, we're ever so fortunate. But let's not credit ourselves with this. So, it may be that as time passes, the problems that once generated these traditions will recur. To a degree, they will recur with each succeeding generation of Al-Anons and AAs. They are bound to. In fact, I hope they do. To a point. There has never been great anything but good outcome in the long run, and sometimes it's been the mighty long run, in dissension with an AA. Up to a point. It is a creator of adversity out of which we may grow as individuals, as groups, and as society. But when that begins to be expressed in real schism and what looks like permanent division, when our internal controversies begin to be apparent in the world around us and keep people from looking at the beacon on the spire, then we begin to be in trouble. So vigilance about these. In AA, and I'm sure in Al-Anon, the advice is rightly and oft given. living today. Tomorrow is gone, yesterday is gone, tomorrow is not here. This is great advice. Because, obviously, the fellow who is still trying to live in the past is either living there with his guilt or the memory of superficially joyous days that he would like to reenact. He is so preoccupied with this thing that he stultifies his own growth and is a drag on people about. In the best sense of the word, he is an ultra-conservative. He fights change. He lives in the past. Then we have the people who are overliving in the now, you might say. The main chance in the next hour. So they flutter from this to that to the other thing. Being so preoccupied by the now that they cannot abstract the lessons from the experience of the past and drag it into the now for use. And this is a function of the tradition. Neither are they able to think about the future, either because they are afraid. So they dwell in the present, and not necessarily with any great or successful growth. Then we have these people who are the dreamers. You'll always need a certain number. But obviously one cannot emotionally live in the future because the realities of today, he can't operate in the framework of now. Now these are the liabilities that we come to when we divide time into past, present, and future. But look at time in another way. Is it not with us humans a stream of consciousness on which we are born along from the past into the present and into tomorrow? And therefore, I think we must more consciously, while always refusing to live emotionally in the past or emotionally in the future, we should be ready to get a sense of history as to the experience of yesterday so as to keep those traditions infused with the power to guide and protect us today. And should we not give thought for the moral? Not in any fearful sense, but in a sense of prudence and responsibility. Where are we going? As individuals, as society? Toward better things? Are we settling for complacency? Are we crying for space flight? What are we doing? Is it sound? Will it spell progress for tomorrow? Well, in the happy state in which we find ourselves in this year of our Lord, 1968, all this happiness, all of this wonder, all of these miracles can bring us complacency. But let me pose what some of the problems of the future might be. Religious schism? No. Probably never. The ecumenical spirit of the world, in its solidly uniting front, crossing all religions, does away with the possibility that might have arisen even 100 years ago here and elsewhere. No. No. But in the world today, have you ever thought what would happen if AA had to go underground? If our people occasionally face firing squads? You know, I say this not in fear, but just in prudence. Let us remember our blessings. Let us take right thought for the lessons of yesterday, that they may bear upon today and tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow. For so many of them as God would let us have. Good night. God bless you.